Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints with me and Maniac. And of course, we are going to talk about the major because, I mean, it'd be pretty mad to actually do like, I mean, to be fair, technically, in a way, Talking Counter did do like a whole episode that was just like about Major's life that wasn't really about the major. Obviously, that the problem there is Major with the Three or Major, the Major, PJ Copenhagen. But to be fair, that podcast is already more about things like getting someone on and just going into their past, sort of like half interview, isn't it? Well, I could make... Here's the thing. As the best interviewer ever in the history of esports, I can make this joke, which is, it's sort of like an interview, but if you just let Chad sit in the room and then die, like just every now and then just like short circuit the interview and, you know, mess up the question you must ask, or just ask a really long question that they don't answer. Because if you don't know, guys, when I ask all those extra parts of my question, those are all off ramps the person can take. But if you want them to take a specific one, you have to limit it or return with a follow-up question. So all I'll say, if Chad, is just use follow-ups, mate. Just have a notepad, and when they don't address the part you wanted, don't go, oh well, gave him a chat. You just go back to the notepad and you'll go back to that point, you'll be able to get it back. There's a little, in fact, that's actually worth millions, that little tip I just gave there, but no one will do it as usual. So the first thing I actually just want to know, Maniac, is obviously we're going to talk about PGL Copenhagen. Just first things first, you're obviously at the event. What have you thought so far? What's it been like for you?
I would say it's been great. I had this little bit of an issue because we ended the major elimination stage on that whole G2 VP, the crash of Jade.
And I feel like it really.
From like a recency bias, I struggled to kind of distance myself from it.
Sure.
But then if I do the exercise and I really try to take a little bit of distance, I would say that this have been 8 great days, honestly. And the playoffs list that we end up with is wonderful. It's freaking perfect. I don't even think I would have another team being in it if I could. So I would say that the Counter-Strike has delivered. There's been obviously a few ups and downs with a couple of teams, but from a broadcast perspective, things went relatively smooth. No major issue. Again, that's aside the Jane crash, which really tainted the whole situation. So it's been a great week for me, and the vibe is really good. We're all here in the same hotel, right? So you get to hang out with the players and the crew every evening or something at the whole hotel lobby or stuff like that. So it's been a very positive experience so far.
I have to say, even though I failed the Pick'em challenge, this is why actually, Maniac, I'm extra salty. Because my actual gamble in the Pick'ems was to say G2 wouldn't make it, and guess which team I had making it? Virtus Pro. So you can imagine I was actually on full bore tilt. I've even told the story. I was actually traveling on a train during Map 2 Maniac. And so the joke, I've told the story on Hot Tech Point Red. I actually thought, oh, it's the train internet. That's why he's like suddenly like teleported from outside that box into the open. Like there's no way he'd do that. I just thought he's done like a weird peek. I've missed or something. So when I actually then rewound it on the YouTube, I was like, because I already thought like,
oh, no.
Look, here's the thing I will say. If indeed what they claim in the G2 camp, which is that Huxley was doing essentially the classic Inferno save, which goes, you let the first guy try to get the kill. If he gets the kill, it's not a save. But if he doesn't, you just pull back and the three people save the guns. If that is true, that story, that is what the call was, then obviously it's not as simple as people think. Because if people think G2 was going for the retake, I do think VP, if the crash doesn't happen, have a very good chance to win that retake. They have all the power positions, and the guy with the AWP is in the best spot you could be in, pretty much. It doesn't have to show. But even so, the problem you have is this, guys. If G2 had forced the retake and lost it, then yes, they'd be busted on the last round and VP would probably win the map and it would be 2-0. But the issue is, I won't say Huxley's lying. I don't think so. Inferno's a classic map when you're locked out of B site with smokes to rotate off. If it's indeed true that G2 was going to save the three guns anyway, then the last round still would have been like an actual real 5-on-5 gun round. So you would have still had to earn it if you were VP. You didn't just off that one round necessarily win the series. So it's not quite as simple as when people are like, they got stolen from making the play. They got stolen from a very good chance to make the playoffs. But the other issue as well is, and this is the one thing that tortures me a bit, is obviously it does make it easier to accept on some level that it was a blowout on the third map. That makes you think, oh, well, okay, fair enough, G2 might be better. But I will just put this in there. You were a competitor. If you do lose in that fashion, and where essentially we all know it's unfair, it's just that there's no actual fair solution, and we don't have the tech to rerun the round in that exact chrono break League of Legends style, then essentially you can't really actually know that that third map is how it would have played out, even if G2 had won without the crash. You know what I mean? Because I always think we do that as analysts. We do act like each map is independent, which it is in a way, but there is also obviously the psychological mindset you go into that last map with. And even though we might all say say, oh, James so calm and cool. Yeah, but I don't know that everyone in VP is. Maybe some of them were on full bar tilt. I was on a train, melting out my mind in the Netherlands. So, well, give me some thoughts on this moment then. Give me your take.
Listen, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. But it's a really complicated situation. But first of all, I agree with you. I think some or a lot of people are very unreasonable with what should have happened or could have happened if the crash didn't. I think it's much more complicated than just saying, oh, that was going to be a 13-11
yes,
DP.
Absolutely.
There's much more intricacies to that. But what I will agree to and what I also try to convey on social media, maybe I didn't do it the right way, but just it is so almost impossible for VP to enter the third map with a fresh mindset
course,
and a positive mindset.
Course.
Like it is almost, it's just impossible.
Yes.
And at that point, I think it's not about saying, hey, there's no way they're going to win the third map because who knows, chain of event, pistol round one into first gun round, suddenly you pick up a little bit of steam and then you can manage to like manufacture a bit of momentum. But it's just that VP are already so mentally weak at the start of map three that only a little pinch, like a little hit in the shoulder is going to make them tumble. So it was really freaking deflating. And the fact that the third map is such a whitewash is like, oh, please. Like, we all know what's happening. And we all know what is going on right there. At the same time, I feel like, as you said, it is it's a complicated situation because it is incredibly unfair for VP what happened and the context of when it happened. But also, the rules were applied. So I almost feel like we're like this very extremely exceptional scenario where maybe the rules just aren't fitting to the situation, but it's a super, like, it's like a Pandora box. If you start opening the door of, you know what, maybe in this case we shouldn't follow the rules. Like, wait a minute. So what are you telling me? You're telling me that we have to qualitatively analyze every single round to know when a decision has to be made. I know we would all love to be able to do that, but the truth is in actuality, it's almost impossible to do. So it's infuriating to watch, but you sort of have to admit that, yeah, I guess the rules were followed. But that doesn't take any pain away from VP, and it doesn't take away the fact that it looked like they were looking at a 2-0 and they were probably the better team in that game until the moment of the crash. So it's just emotionally pretty deflating. But if you're G2, hey, what are you going to do? You're going to seize the chance. Like, there's an opportunity right there. You go on that third map, you beat the shit out of them, and you go into the playoff where nobody really expected you at that point. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's just a pretty sad event, and I think it's really... on top of that, what I said is that it happened at the end. So it's like it colored unfairly the end of the elimination stage, which I think ran pretty smoothly up until then and had cool stories. Well, now, hopefully, as we enter the playoff, then we can start focusing on the most exciting side of it.
One thing I would just quickly say is, one, if people don't know, as Maniac just stressed there, I went out of my way on Hot Take Point Mate to make this point because I was actually recording that the night of the thing happened. So I knew everyone's going to watch it and go mental. One thing I want people to understand is PGL absolutely followed not only the rules, but the rules that all big towns strike. If this was an ESL event, you're all going to tell me, like I would agree, ESL runs the best events. ESL would have had the same ruling, I can tell you right now, because the way the rule is interpreted, quite crucially, is this. It's not... did, like, a lot of people know the first part, which is, where's damage done? But that's not it, actually. Like, there was a famous example brought up from, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Pro League or something. It was that match that basically where you had Fnatic played Outsiders, fully enough, versus Pro, I think. And there was a round where, like, it might even have been IM Rio, where, like, all three Fnatic players dropped from the server in, like, a 3v3. Now, the key thing is, there's a slight different interpretation of the rule, which you just have to know if you haven't watched the other show, which goes like this. Traditionally, it was damage done. If damage is done, the round plays out. It doesn't matter if you crash. It doesn't matter if a guy drops, etc. But in that scenario for Fnatic specifically, there's like a bracket, there's a parenthesis on the rule, and it says something like that the round continues, like as something along the lines of like essentially if there's still like a way for the team that's been affected by the crash to win. So if they have people alive, if they have people still in the round, then it continues. So the reason why for the Fnatic one, it actually was replayed, if you ever go back and look, it's because all three of them dropped from the server, so there was no way their team could have won the round. Essentially, the crash did take the round from them. The problem with the VP one is, even if you're the biggest VP fan in the world, yes, that was a very, very key player in a very strong position, but it still wasn't like the round was over. G2 still had to frag, they still had to come into the site, still had to coordinate. You still could have won the round if you were VP. And by the way, I'll just point this out because I think it's the only way to be fair, is I always do this, Maniac, because I come from the world of philosophy where you understand your principles and then you apply them to the scenario. If VP had still won that round, guys. And at the end, they win in the clutch. And like maybe the guy like on the bomb spot, whatever, kills two people. Would all you VP fans say, hey, there was a crash earlier. Restart the round. No, of course you wouldn't. You'd go, the crash sucks, but the results should stand because we won the round. So even though, as I said at the outset, it is unfair to everyone on some level. I mean, you could argue it's not to G2 because nothing happened to them and they got to win the round. But if you'd have done any other measure, like restart the round, it would have been in some sense unfair to them. Unfortunately, right now, this is all we can do. There's a reason why that rule has existed. The whole time Maniac was a pro player, it's because essentially when we run lands and we're not doing like a sports event where we can just cancel it and come back and play the whole thing another day, we have time considerations. We also know these things are going to happen a lot, by the way, in online qualifiers with like 1,000 team brackets. We've made these rules to get most instances and be as fair as we can. I will say, you did bring up one minor thing there that I'd maybe just say food for thought. We'd have to get into it now. The one angle I'd maybe throw in is most crashes don't usually decide who wins the map or the game. They're just around, and it's like, look, we've actually been pretty lucky with crashes in Counter-Strike history. I'll even say, guys, like, we've never had it happen in a major final, for example. There's never been a guy in a 1v2 where one of the other ones just dies and it becomes a 1v1 and he wins it easy. Luckily, that's never happened. We've never had the nightmare scenario where a crash did sort of like, to this extent, decide a game. So I would say the one maybe consideration you could do would be something like, I know that in some sports where they gradually introduced like video refereeing, for example, the ability to review like a play in the NBA, did that shot come off before the buzzer went? There are certain scenarios where you can't review every play, Maniac. I can't just say, hey, that was bullshit what you did there. Like, but if it's like one to decide a quarter or a half, it's like something at the end of a game like this, then you could maybe make the debate. Maybe that should have a different system of review, yeah, or maybe a different set of rules. But again, I'd say that's more food for thought. We're not going to figure that out in 5 minutes here spitballing. That's actually, believe or not even something for me, mate. That's for the admins. That's for that like Michael guy, Polish guy from ESL, the ones who've done admining for like 10 years. I'd trust them to know what's possible and what you could implement if there was better tech. Even that thing I suggested of having a League of Legends style chrono break where you can start the game from the perfect scenario. Look, I would actually prefer that over not do anything. But even then, I will admit, the problem with Counter-Strike is it's inherently an information game. So if you already do know all the positions everyone had, which we all would restart you, you will never actually be able to get that round back. It'll just be a different round, yeah, and then we see who wins the other round. So that's why I say there's no real fair scenario. You just have to essentially pick, what are you picking? In this case, what they're picking, and I'll just say this last thing, so if you're a VP fan, you can calm down and enjoy the rest of the episode, is understand the reason why, in a way, this rule is fair, is because if it had actually been G2 that had crashed like this, they would have gotten fucked by it. So do you understand? It wasn't like this was, it wasn't like someone from PGL went, like King Solomon, like, I will decide who is the correct person. I choose VG. No one from PGL chose anyone. They just applied the rules to the situation. And unfortunately, in this case, it just so happened VP didn't make it. I'll spin that into this one thing to say this, Maniac, which is, this actually is almost a dream bracket for me, because if I actually look, if we ignore the 3-0s and 3-2s, I picked 7 of these 8 teams to be in the playoffs, Maniac. It's only Eternal Fire I didn't. Obviously, I gambled on the VP angle instead. And obviously, I have my own reasons for not liking Eternal Fire that much. But aside from that, like, if you're going to get 7 out of the 8 teams I want, well, I can only ask for one more. That's a pretty banging bracket. And you look at it, we've got like, even this angle, let's just start here, Maniac. I even think a cool angle people aren't realizing, because of how much parity is in World Counter-Strike, if you're not Team Spirit, is, you know, normally I would bitch about this bracket in one way. I would go, the top side's too overloaded. Look at it, all the teams that should win in the top. Mate, I can't even say that right now. Right now, FaZe and Vitality might not win an event. Right now, maybe Mouse can blow everyone of it. Maybe Na'Vi actually is the truth, and they're peaking now, and Blade's going to be a genius and win without Simple. I actually look at this bracket. Look, I will say, if you're the teams in the bottom half, the Mouse, G2, Eternal Fire, Na'Vi, I will say you should all be incredibly empowered that, like, hey, all of us could be in the final. There is that. But even so, I think what I've learned about this tournament so far is, unless you are Team Spirit, and by the way, I've never seen them play with the slide up in a playoff, every other team, all bets are off, mate. What's great is this is actually Counter-Strike, Maniac. It isn't like going in the old days where if you just knew the map pool, you knew who was going to win that series 2-1. You knew this team has better players. Right now, I actually think the parity is amazing. This playoffs could be really exciting.
No, I'm right there with you. I really think, looking at the quarterfinals, I wouldn't even be able to point to one and tell you that I think the result is obvious. Like, yes, there's no quarterfinal where I can.
Oh, everything's winnable. State. Yeah, everything's winnable.
Yeah, everything is open. Also, because I think, beautifully enough, for some of the lineups that haven't exactly performed to the very best at group stage, and I have Vitality in phase in mind. We all know that there is a very high chance that they will perform much better now that we are entering the realm of a stage and a major playoff. And that rules or that philosophy kind of applies in the other way around for Spirit, which is for two of these players, a first time playoff stage. So we're still not playoff stage, but at the major, right? So there's so many different ways you can look at this bracket and sort of start building whatever narratives could happen. I have a feeling that the winner still belongs in the top part of it.
Sure.
Because if I'm building the case, the only real case that I can make for the bottom bracket holding the winner currently is that G2 would enter in sort of a Cologne-like trance where they just, you know, take off for some crazy reason and then they become the untamable beast of the stage. That's all. Because I personally have Miles over G2. I just think if you compare the Counter-Strike at this very moment, Miles is a better, stronger team right now. And it's not just individual. It's the Counter-Strike in general is just better. But then if you tell me, okay, Maniac, now the final is going to be Miles FaZe, you think Miles is going to win? That would say, I don't really know. Actually, FaZe beat them all the time. So that's my problem. I feel like my strongest contender in the bottom half of the bracket is Miles. But I wouldn't give them the favor against almost none of the teams that are at the top brackets. And that's the angle that I'm going with. I don't know who from the top bracket is going to be there, but I feel like almost anyone would have my favors over Miles. And that's what makes it beautiful as well, because for Miles to make sort of the final step or the next step, however you want to name it, would be to make it all the way. Well, I mean, I think starting by beating G2 in the quarterfinal would be decent, but still would be to make it all the way to the grand final and then beat like an ogre of a team in the final of the major. And this would be like the most impressive and incredible way to mark that step for them. So yeah, I have plenty of different stories in my head that I go through when I'm looking at this bracket.
I've got the segue though, because I know where we need to start, and this is an important topic, and you've given me the segue perfectly, because even though I agree, Maniac, in a way you are cheating, because here's why. Take Spirit out of the top half and you can pick any of the four teams and put them in there. All of a sudden, you wouldn't say that about the bottom half. The real problem is this. Spirit is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that top half of the bracket. I know the names of Vitality and FaZe are obviously huge. But, mate, the problem is this. I've looked at almost everyone's pick'em video. Bro, I think everyone thinks Spirit is winning this major. I even said it on Twitter. Bro, I don't do this. People will know this. One of the reasons why I rode with FaZe for so many tournaments they didn't win last year is I nearly always bank on the team that's elite and has the experience advantage. I do think experience advantage is a massive factor in this game. Normally, by the way, also give a lot of credit to IGLs. I think when you're in pressure matches, the IGL can make the game-winning player, actually in a way that it's underrated, because everyone can see if the star player makes the game-winning player, but people do underrate how good good IGLs are under pressure. The problem is, even though I'm not actually a big Chopper fan, he's obviously never done it before in a massive tournament like this, and quite frankly, normally, I would actually stress all the things I did before the Katowice ones, like, look, they should choke, and there's no reason why they can, and even if they can win the first match, you know, maybe in the semis, the pressure goes on. The problem is this, Maniac, if I just look at the Counter-Strike, bro, I've said it on Twitter, I have never seen a team that looks this strong that also didn't have the experience, and you had any reason to doubt, because essentially, if I take the experience out, I would bet Spirit confidently to win this major. They're just too good, mate. So, I don't think the map pool is too crazy.
My take on Spirit is that if they win their quarterfinal, there's a very high chance they win this major. But I will say, and now that is probably a hot take, I think FaZe is going to beat them in the quarterfinal.
Ooh, okay. I didn't know you actually picked... Okay. Did you have FaZe winning the major then? Did you pick FaZe winning the major?
No.
You picked Mouse to win the major?
You know what I did.
You actually picked Mouse to win. You know you what picked I did. Vitality the whole way. Sorry, my mistake, mate. I forgot I was talking to you. You picked Vitality.
Yeah, exactly.
Because here's your problem. I already know your problem. As an analyst, Maniac, here's your issue. You, even though right now, for all we know, Ziwu's ill. He doesn't actually have his top form. The problem is, you couldn't live with yourself if he turns up and he is the MVP and he blasts everyone, and then you picked against him. And then they're all there at the after party like, Mathieu, what is going on? You did not pick him.
I would never come back from that.
No, you can't live with that, can you? I can't believe I even for a moment thought, mouse pick.
No,
geez, so
listen, listen. No, but all of my takes have like caveats. All of my takes have caveats. So, The first step is I think FaZe is going to be Spirit, because I think that what happened in Katowice, the 3-0 was a little bit of a smokescreen.
Sure.
I think the second map was extremely tight on a knife's edge on a couple of rounds. And if FaZe managed to push to a third map, I think they beat Spirit. If it's 1-1 scoreline and you arrive on that third map, at the major in the playoff, I think that this is where the experience really kicks in, and I think they beat them. I think it's going to be a huge game, and I acknowledge that there is a world in which Spirit destroy FaZe 2-0. Sure. That I acknowledge sure. that. I know it is a world. But if FaZe managed to win one of the two first maps, and if we go to three, I think FaZe beat Spirit. That's my take. Now, for Vitality, By the way, that genuinely makes me think, mate.
Like, you know, like, people kept commenting that during, like, the GM crash, there was some sort of, like, geomagnetic storm that, like, hit the Earth or something. It was some, like, stupid angle like that that people brought up, right? I feel like what it's done is just flipped the polarity of this show, because why am I picking the underdog? Like, new players that are looking hot and really good. I don't normally do this. Meanwhile, Maniac's just going with, like, I'm going to go with experience of the boomerang. We've reversed it. Okay, it's interesting. Go on, then. Give me the Vitality angle.
We flipped it.
Yes. Why is Vitality going to win?
What I was going to say is, here is the following. If Vitality beat Cloud9, that means, and it's unconditionally, that means unconditionally that Zywoo plays better Counter-Strike. I don't think Vitality can beat Cloud9 if Zywoo isn't fitting better and providing a better Counter-Strike than he did, right? We know the context now. It's been made public. He was fitting like shit, ill. I think he even had like a medical consultation for a
while. Premise that he had like a flu or a cold or something? Is that what it's implied?
Yeah, I think it was a bit more than that. Could have been like a food poisoning or something, right. But he was feeling really, really bad.
Okay.
Barely slept, barely ate. So, and I mean, if you watch him play the last game against Complexity, you can almost see that he's like borderline delirious, like he's lost in some situation. So it was really rough to watch. Now, I'm going to be optimistic and I'm going to say that this isn't the side we see here. Sure. Now, if Vitality managed to beat Cloud9, now, there is no way for me to tell you that they wouldn't be able to beat Spirit or FaZe in a semifinal of a major. They have a good track record against FaZe. They have a good track record. They beat them in some of these situations. So I wouldn't know why I would not give Vitality a chance to beat FaZe. The Spirit one is a little bit more complicated for me in a rational standpoint. I would almost have to take more of like a romantic angle of Zywoo versus Donk and like the crashes.
Well, the funny
like
thing is what I said last episode. Incredible. We've never seen that matchup. That matchup has never happened yet with these lineups. Exactly. We've never seen it.
Yeah, exactly. But I have less legs to stand on. But in my wicked mind, since I think FaZe is going to beat Spirit, if I imagine this semi-final of FaZe Vitality happening, then I'm ready to say Vitality can beat that. And now, if Vitality ends up in the grand final, nobody beats them from the lower bracket. From the bottom part, I mean. If Vitality ends up in the grand final, nobody beats them. There's no team that beats Vitality. Vitality has one of the best records in grand final that there is in recent history of Counter-Strike.
Of course, yeah. Just a fact. Yeah.
They don't lose grand finals. They won all of them. So I know there's a lot of if and buts, so I'm not just going to stand here and say, oh, no, Vitality's going to win the major, that's for sure. But if the quarterfinals go according to my plan, which is Vitality beating Cloud9 and FaZe edging out Spirit, then I think there's a world. But I'm not going to pretend like it's the most logical one or the most rational one. There is a world in which that happens.
No, what I like there is you actually at the end are fully aware that you have actually like fed a little bit of copium for Vitality, which is like... Well, here's the question people would ask, is if Vitality wasn't even in the tournament, would Maniac still find a way that FaZe wins the match? That's the obvious question that, you know, the prosecution lawyer would ask. It's like, you know, some would say you're looking for a way FaZe can win that match so that Spirit doesn't have to play Team Vitality, right? In a way?
No, so if I was really honest, I guarantee you if that had nothing to do with Vitality, I would still say FaZe could be Spirit.
Here's the thing.
I'm being genuine here.
Here's the thing, Mini. I do think you believe that, but I also think the part of your brain that's the unconscious is what's doing all the heavy lifting on this one. And I'll throw this out there. I will add this. Two things. One, to your credit, you did repeatedly stress that this is if Zywoo is like MVP level form and he's the Zywoo we all expect. Then obviously, yes, I agree, by the way. I think at that point, Vitality certainly could win the event. But I'll flip it back onto you because the more interesting question is this. Is let's just say for a moment, my prediction's right and Spirit wins that match. But it's Spirit Vitality Semi and Zywoo turns up. Now that's what I want to know, Maniac, is if real Zywoo plays real Donk, what do you think then? What would your thoughts be? Because that's the match I want to see. You're low-key, you know.
Yeah. So I'm trying to articulate my thoughts about that. I think that if real Zywoo meets full force Donk, I almost feel like then you would have to look down the lineup to look for like factors.
Well, do it for me then. You know, so how does it shake out elsewhere then?
So I would say probably the next name on the list. Well, I mean, there's two obvious names, but in different ways. But I think if Flames is capable of having games like we've seen recently, that is a huge factor for Vitality. Like his entering role is just just absolutely needed for Vitality right now. And it sort of hides a different problem, which is in general, Vitality did not play a good Counter-Strike so far at the event. Like, it's been pretty messy. The T-sides looked a little bit out of identity, out of shape. So they've heavily relied on Flames finding some of the entries, because whenever Vitality is out of shape or out of sorts, and then I see Zywu going in first, sort of peeking impossible angles and giving away his life, I almost want to just absolutely pluck my ass out. So if Flames showing up, that's the thing. Then you need to have Sphinx playing as one of the five best players in the world. I think his multi-kill ability on the CT side is very much needed. But shit, I would have to do like the map pool wise, I'm not really able to articulate right now how it would look like between the two teams. My Ancient would be moved. Oh, but they take away Inferno, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah, basically, actually, I did run that one in like the Ion Technical one. It probably would be something like maybe like a Mirage Nuke Anubis if you do Spirit Vitality, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay. Yeah, so I think we would almost certainly look towards the map number 3, because I don't think Vitality could handle Mirage against Spirit. I don't think they could. Spirit is just way too strong on it, and Vitality is pretty rusty. I think Vitality might be a little bit more creative on Nuke and have a little bit more to rely on, and then it would all end up on Anubis. And it's been a minute since I saw Spirit on the map, but I still think they're pretty excellent. So yeah, I think against my heart, I might have to side with Spirit against Vitality, even if we're looking at full force, like absolute every player is going in. I think you might have to edge towards Spirit in that one.
No,
but then again,
there
are intangibles coming in.
Like, here's how I would frame it. Go on.
There's the intangibles. So it's about just like the fact that we are at a major, and whether we like it or not, for some of these players, it is a brand new one.
Sure.
I know that we did the same thing in Katowice, where we said, that's first stage Katowice, let's see what's going to go down. And they absolutely wrecked everybody. So that's already a sort of proof of concept that's right there. But what I would like to see is Spirit actually being in trouble early on the stage at the major and see what they're made of. I feel like, unfortunately, quote unquote, because I really like that team, unfortunately, we didn't see that in Katowice. Like, their wins were so decisive. And like, there's no reason for you to feel at any point pressure or lost in the game. You're just basically destroying whoever's in front of you. So I'm still to see how Spirit reacts losing a map on a big stage, coming back, you know, having that team talk, coming back, sitting down. After all, still a very, very young roster overall. So I'm still looking to see that.
What I think makes this a banger, if it happens, and by the way, if I'd have had my way, these two teams were in the opposite side of the bracket. This could have been the final. Like, I think also, by the way, I think if you want Spirit to win and be champ, look, they have got an amazing draw now where they've got a super legit draw. But also, the silliest thing, as we're describing here, is we actually see probably the quarter of the semis, the hardest matches they play. They might actually have an easier time in the final, whereas traditionally you want like the final to be the biggest hurdle that you almost have to pole vault your world record to get over. And then you're the true kings of Counter-Strike. So what I'll say is this, when you have Vitality against Spirit, I think one thing that makes this matchup a banger is, like I said, first of all, we've never seen it. So we're not going off anything. We're all theory crafting. And as a result, all your initial assumptions that you laid out there are going to be what's then going to get you to your conclusions. There are no hard and fast rules. In fact, you can't even know, like we say, what maps you'd necessarily win, because these two teams, we know what they do against other people, but we have no idea what they do against each other. So I think if you look on the star end of the equation, this is where it suddenly got really interesting because of this silly Zywu angle. Because normally, here's what I would say, no problem. Both teams have an incredibly reliable, extremely good superstar. One's Donk and one's Zywu. The problem is, bizarrely, you're in a weird world where Zywu isn't actually that player right now because we don't know what form he's going to come in on. So at the moment, I actually give like the star component in terms of like reliability to Spirit, because I do kind of know what like Donk and probably Shiro are going to play like. But I'll tell you what, if I grant you a world where I get like pretty good or maybe very good play from Zywu, and then you have, like you say, even just for a map, a Flames pop off, it's basically the reason they've won all these tournaments and even dominated FaZe. If you get that and you tell me I have Zywu, Sphinx and Flames popping off, well, here's the thing, mate. When you go down to go to the Zontix, man, they don't have that third player like that. Like, Zontix can win a bunch of clutches for you. He can have a really nice half, but I'm not going to put him on the level of some of those names. So I think what's funny for me is, I think Vitality, for me, have the ultimate puncher's chance. If those three players turn up and frag out, I think they can win against anyone, by the way. They can win this major. But actually, bizarrely, considering they were on paper until recently, like the spiritual number one. We all know FaZe was ranked number one because they made every final. But because we haven't seen Spirit play Vitality, A second before Katowice, guys, we all thought Vitality was the number one team in the world. So even though they've been dodgy here, part of us wants to see this matchup. Well, bizarrely, I actually do think it's more... This is why it's almost like we've inverted the favourite underdog dynamic. Because I have to say, from what I've seen, match to match to match, one thing I have to give mad props to Spirit is, this is why I'm so glad after Katowice, I did try to make people think it's not just Donk. Because, mate, the consistency of how they play as a team in Spirit is so impressive. Yeah, yeah. That's the area. Again, I get the sense myself, Chopper isn't like a tactical genius. But that aspect of it, how they're holding the team together, is very impressive. Like, that was the thing I thought. I thought, look, even if your Donk guy goes crazy, maybe the Zontix guy drops off. Or you know what? Magix doesn't win those clutches. Maybe one of their maps becomes a problem. I got to give them credit. Since they have basically, except for the one mouse loss at that RMR and then the couple of maps where Donk just played like shit for no reason, aside from that, they just look fabulous every game pretty much. Like, it's hard to bet against this team, isn't it?
I agree with you. What they really have going for them, and which I think is really impressive from like a purist, a lover of Counter-Strike, is they have one of the most versatile T-side there currently is in the game. As in, like, they are fully capable of executing absolutely opposite playstyle from round to round. Like, there are moments where you almost feel like they're picking a page out of the VP book, because they're going to whittle down the clock until 30 seconds. And any kind of aggression coming their way, they're going to absolutely easily eat it up completely and then play the 5v4, the 4v3 the way they have to, which makes it very hard to be on the aggression when you're a CT side against Spirit, because Chopper or whoever is calling at that moment usually has a pretty good read on when to play slow, and they know how to do it. And on top of that, when they decide to play fast, I think they probably currently have some of the most refined and optimized execute there is in the game. Like, you can watch, if you watch like an aerial view of their executes and the timing of the entries while the smokes are popping with the flashes and all, it's like, again, I don't think there is a T-side. Maybe you can argue Mouse at times can have sort of that kind of synergy and team play. But besides that, I don't think there's anybody that can hold a candle to Spirit's T-side. I think it is miles ahead of anybody. And if we do a Spirit Vitality comparison, it is night and day. This would be one of the departments where I think Spirit's got the advantage largely. On the CT side, though, I think they rely a little bit more on individual power and a few gambles here and there, which makes them sometimes vulnerable to punish. They're not exactly a team that start rounds in like universal setup where they then just react to what's happening and they adjust. They have a lot of like gambles from the first second where they decide, okay, this is where we're going to go this round. And then if they lose a member, they stack pretty quickly. And then they rely on individuals having incredible multi-kill ability. And we know Shiro can do it with the AWP. We know Zontix can do it as an anchor. And obviously don't even need to mention it. So for me, the real big, big difference is the T-side and the quality of the protocols they have on the T-side. And then they rely on an incredibly skilled team on the CT side. But yeah, all of that is very reliable right now. I think that's why we don't see a huge drop off from them. Like, all of it is extremely reliable. The way they play is very sustainable as well. I don't think it's too gimmicky. I don't think it's too reliant on gambles at all. So that's why I think the floor right now for Spirit is probably one of the highest we have in the game.
Yeah, I'll actually tie back to what we talked about in the post-Katowice episode, which is, this is why I do think it's still somewhat underrated by fans, because a lot of fans are just stat-checking and they're just looking at the rating and they go, oh my God, the crazy numbers, and they're seeing the frags. So a lot of them are still like riding the Donk hype train as if he was like simple 1v9ing, which I've always stressed. He's never been in that scenario so far. This team really does a fabulous job of playing around him and playing to his strengths. And if they somehow actually win this major and he's the MVP, I'll tell you the two things that must happen. Every single aggressive rifler you actually need for real to watch all of his demos, because the things he is doing to get those weird like jiggle peaks and ducks and the way he dodges and stuff, that stuff, I thought it was a gimmick at first, mate. It just works. Like, it makes it so tricky when you face him, not least because people know he does that. So it gets in their head. It becomes like a mind game of, how is he going to peek? Is he going to slope it? Is he just going to walk out? Like, he has so many angles himself. And then the coolest thing is, Maniac, normally aggressive players like that, because they're given what, you know, freedom by the IGL and core, sometimes they get too much freedom and actually they don't get the setup. He also has the setup, so it feels like it's both ends. He individually does the micro moves to like sort of condition the opponent, but then the IGL himself, like you say, with the pace changes, with the flash entries, with sometimes having someone else jump frame, or sometimes it's Donk there, you never know which one it is. I also think they do an amazing job just on the T side of how many different looks they can give you, and even the same entry, the same sight hit. Like, that part is really going to be in some teams' heads, I think. So I think That's the aspect where, for real, it's not just Donk's skill. His skill obviously is emphasizes, but the way they're using an aggressive rifler, I don't think we've ever seen this in Counter-Strike Mini. If I think of the great aggressive riflers of the olden days, the Olaf Meisters of the world, the Forests, etc., a lot of that was just like, that they had like a reliable entry who jumps and then they just do the trade. Or if it was Olaf Meister, maybe he just runs out himself and he just had a great timing of when to go. I've never seen a team play around them this way. Normally we think of the players you play all the resources into. It's like the Lurker or it's the Opera or something, you know. So I think in a way that's the revolutionary part of the game to me. It's like, it's the way they're using Donk. I'm so impressed by it. That's why if it holds up, I don't just look at Spirit. I say like a lot of teams have to rethink how we're playing Counter-Strike right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think they have either very one-sided wins, because these are moments where the few like liberties and freedom they give to Donk, he actually just pays off immediately. And they're like, okay, he runs up top mid on Mirage, he gets a pop flash, and he gets 2.5 kills immediately, so you don't even have to worry about the round. But the fact that they are able to withstand the loss of this guy early on in the round and still win, this is where they get actually incredibly like terrifying as a team, right? Because I think they are very aware of what are the scenarios, like what are the contingency plans if that move doesn't work out. Okay, we're going to set up this aggression. We're going to send him first in because that's what he likes to do. He likes to be aggressive. Boom, we do the setup, whatever trick that is. And then right behind, they know how to move, how to position themselves if that didn't work out. And I think that's why they're so cool to watch, is because they barely seem like they are caught off guard tactically, like as a team. Like, sure, some players can be, you can always have a timing against you and then you fall because you were looking on the wrong direction. But if you look at tactically how they position on the map, it's very rare that they are completely wrong and like they completely mistimed the situation. And it's like, no, they either know how they're going to compensate for the loss of a player, or they just, as I said before, they don't try to play the universal round. They just say, okay, well, we cut our losses. We're going to stack this bomb side over here. We put Shiro on the other side. We win AWP. Maybe he can grab a kill, but we're going to stack the other side. They're very coherent in how they try to maximize their choices. And even then, that's in the worst case scenario. That's in the scenario where the crazy Donk one-man army situation doesn't pay off. Then they can still win the round. But if it does, then what are you even supposed to do? Like, they, the fact that you can have bomb side situations on the T side where you're attacking, and then you have Donk swinging wide on you, probably getting 1 to 2 kills, and then as you're opening up for the trade, you have Shiro posted with an AWP and an angle, which is the thing he likes the most in the world. So yes. I think that's also why, and that's one of the storylines that maybe is the most underrated in that lineup, is that Shiro gets to play the Counter-Strike that he loves the most in that team, and you can see it. Like, he's not needed to entry a la Monacy or whatever, which is never what he was wanting to do. What he wants to do is to be a punitive AWP, locking down lines, and then gradually just taking space away from the opponent. And then he has people in front of him who will take all of the first risks, and then he just gets to set up. Tack, he's very reliable. Like, when was the last time you saw Shiro miss, like, a sitter? Sure. Or someone walks in his crosshair, he's almost got, like, 98% success rate for these kind of situations. So he gets to do exactly what he wants. Yes. And I think that's a synergy that is underrated as well.
No, I'm with you. Like, the most OP thing for Shiro's game specifically, it's why actually, fair play to him, I thought he lost his mind when he went to this team. Maybe he knew something I didn't. Maybe actually, like, figured some of this out, because the prescience seems crazy. Like, as you say, he's probably the best. I used to think Device was the king of this, but I think Shiro's overtaken him. If it's like the 7 out of 10 difficulty shot, like you say, he probably hits it 98% of the time. Like, you've never seen this guy whiff a shot like that James shot that he whiffed on the aforementioned crash round where he whiffed on that construction shot. Like, normally everyone hit that one. Shiro will never miss that shot ever in his entire life. Like, that's not even what you worry about. And then, as you say, the setup almost feeds him those kills. That's crazy. One more thing on this, and then we'll talk about another team, which is one thing that did crack me the fuck up. Obviously, like you say, with all that VP crash, everyone's on a bit of a downer. Then the whole thing of, like, they edited out the VOD. Like, oh my God, the cover-up. It's crazy, man. Like, so what I'll say is, here's a funny bit to lighten the mood a second, which is, if you go and watch the Vitality clip when Apex starts talking shit, right, about the fact that Zeru's not even there. What's hilarious about this clip is the timing of when he says, like, and Zeru wasn't even here and they thought they could get us or something like that. Bro, Zeru stood, like, right in front of him because they're all coming down the line after the game to, like, do this handshake. But even then, by the way, Zeru doesn't even, like, he just, like, looks like 1,000 miles there. Like you said, he looked like he was a zombie, mate. He actually didn't look like if they're saying he's ill, he was. I totally believe it. Not just from in the server, but out of the server. So I just thought that was, like, a funny moment, because it was one of those ones where it's like, you essentially just said, and Z wasn't here, and he's right there for you. Like, God, that's just awkward, Apex. You know what I mean?
But that's really Apex. That's really Apex to do that. Like, there's nobody else who could do that. But also, I think, like, there's in a way, it's almost therapeutical for a team like Vitality to be able to laugh about that, because like, it's obvious for everybody. Like, for everybody, it's obvious that Zav was going through something.
No, he's it shouldn't even be the biggest bummer of all time. You should even actually sort of think, hey, we're probably going to lose the tournament now if he doesn't turn up. Right? Yeah, it's normally be a morale breaker, right?
So now, if you're Vitality and you have to sort of survive through the Swiss system of the elimination stage, and you can do that with your superstar that's under the weather and definitely underperforming, I don't know. I mean, there's always many different ways to look at things, but personally, I'd like to think that this is a positive signal for the rest of the team. Like, hey, we can win without him. And I mean, without him, again, he had like 1.12 rating. So let's all be careful. Like, he didn't have a 0.8 rating or he was in a negative influence all the time, but it was far, far, far away from what he can do. But hey, we can still win. Like, hey, if I'm Spinks, if I'm Flamesy, I'm probably conscious right now of the fact that, hey, I carried my team to the playoffs. Like, I can do it. And so hopefully it's something clicks in them as well, where they don't overly rely on him later on in the playoff, because they had to make the move. Like, they had to make the moves. They had to make the difference. He wasn't providing that kind of difference that he usually does. So hopefully they can carry that over. And yeah, if you're Apex, might as well laugh about it. Just be fucking obvious about it. You know?
Well, as you guys have seen, it may be actually, if it had just been a different team in Envy, maybe Maniac would have been a great coach, because you see, he has unlimited hopium. He will never surrender. He'll always, he even flipped the narrative to like, but wait, we're winning without him though. So that's even better. It's like, okay, whatever. Listen, it's all good. That is one angle. One thing I will say is fun, though, is this is another reason why the bracket specifically is so fun, mate. Because, mate, normally I'm supposed to say with Cloud9, like, I should pick Vitality to beat them. You know, a lot of reasons. Bro, if you were to set up a match for C9 now that is winnable, remember, they don't have a traditional AWP. Jiwoo B and Ill's a pretty fucking banging angle to give them a chance. Then you think, even when Vitality was really good at that blast last year, they had that amazing playoff match that was like super close. C9 could have won. That was when they were in theory both at their peak. And right now, I do think they're slightly overperforming, but guys, C9 is fragging out of control right now. And the best angle of all, we all complained the last month or so, mate, Axile heard the call. He got the memo. Like Gandalf the fucking White, he has actually arrived at this major and looks pretty fucking good. That's the funnest thing of all, is like, I do think even if C9 wins this match, mate, I still wouldn't have them win the major. I think they're the only team in the top half of the bracket I don't think can win the major or even make the final. But I'll tell you what, they've somehow locked into a tournament favourite. That looks like it's not even impossible they can win this. Like, C9's kind of on a heater right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I have to be honest, I don't really know what to make of the Axel situation. Because you say, we've been complaining about him for a month. I'll say I've been complaining about him for a year and a half.
Okay.
Like, even with the previous... with the previous Gambit roster into the Cloud9, I think whenever we came to LAN, and then of course, when the super team got put together, then that was even the worst.
Oh, sure.
For me, like, the negative bias comes from way, way earlier. But then somehow, holy shit, what is this Axel that we're seeing now with Cloud9? So I don't even know how to mentally get my head around it. I don't know if it's a fuck this situation where he has nothing to lose anymore. And I think maybe he is aware that if there isn't anything that changes drastically right now, then that might just be his last event. And he just decided to throw caution to the wind, because one of the kind of interesting numbers you can find if you dig a little bit deeper is that he's got the most opening frag attempt of the team now. Like, someone that I would prior peg as overly passive and like super shy in the game and not really taking any decisions and kind of letting the game come to him. Like, at this event, he's been like always going in. He's making tons of moves on the CT side, pushing a whole lot. So I don't really know. Either it's been like a team conversation where they discuss like, hey, listen, like, this is what you need to do from now on. Like, we need you to take this risk. We need you to have these plays and all. Or it's just he decided that, hey, whatever I was doing isn't working. I might be on my way out, but if I'm going out, I'm going out on a blaze of glory. And I'm going to push. And lo and behold, now he's actually finding the kills early on. And his eye test is much better.
Yes.
Because also he was supposed to be a guy that we talked as very, very skilled.
Of course.
Didn't see that skill for about 6 months now. And now he's starting to have like a low time to kill again. So, yeah, this is a very unfortunate timing for the Vitality fans around the world. You would really love to have Axel being underwhelming. That's just not the case. And then the one angle, if you're looking for weaknesses on the Cloud9 side, is that Boomich remains super inconsistent on the map that he plays. I think he's got maps where with the AWP, things click pretty well. Like, Anubis is a good example. Ancient is a good example. Well, here he doesn't really play with the AWP, but at least individually he's decent. And he's got maps where he struggles a whole lot. So that's your one way in, I think, if you're trying to fight Cloud9. But it is true that with Axile on this level, then the skill overall of this lineup is super frightening. And also Electronic having a little bit of a resurgence after a quiet RMR. I'm not going to lie. I think they definitely have a say in this Vitality game. The map pool also is pretty, like, they meet in the middle. Like, they shake hands on the maps they want to play. There's no, I punish you, you punish me.
Yeah,
they're all
going
to play
maps
they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think I agree with you. I don't imagine a world in which Cloud9 wins this major. But in that specific matchup, I'm going to show up to the desk tense as hell. And I'm going to be worried for Vitality probably until the very last second of this game.
No, I actually agree as well. Yeah, it has all the hallmarks of potentially a great 1-2. I actually think, because like you say, there's some shared maps on this 1-2. It's quite a fun angle, so everyone should be comfortable. Hopefully it takes away the choke component. People to play the back. On the Axile thing, I will say, I know what you mean. Like, the problem I have is this. When people said, here's the problem. There's a take, and it goes like this. Because people are doing, like, well, what is different from Axile now? From then, it's like you say, it's the super team, right? Before, when he had Nefani as his IGL, that's when he was the superstar player. So people are thinking, must be Nefani's calling style. But it's like, guys, isn't the one thing we all banged on Nefani, his calling style? Wasn't that, like, the least effective part of his game? If anything, to me, it's that Nefani, actually on T-side, was a lunatic. He was the guy who was the IGL would go in. He would just go and make a fight. I actually thought, that is amazing. If you're someone like Axile, I've always said this in history, as much as like someone like Forrest at one point in time was the best player, he also in his style doesn't want to be the first one in. He wants like your Freiburg or someone to run in, and then he does the amazing trades and cleans up the site. Everyone knows the Forrest ones, he come in like midway through the pack. So to me, that's where you put like an Axile at his best. But the difference is Bumic maybe does it a bit more now. I do think he lost his own actually like feel for the game though, because I refuse to believe people were implying he was just washed skill wise. Like, I know it's CS2, so to be fair, last time he was really great was in CSGO. There's a little bit of difference there. But the thing is, Maniac, when you think of the eye test in 2022 of this guy, like, when this guy would dominate, he was one of the most fun AK players to see in the whole world. He was so crisp. His fucking duels he would take. I mean, he wasn't on a donk level, but he had his own, like, sort of, like, he was so good at doing the jiggle peek and just the instant headshot. Like, he looked like, he was one of those players where I guarantee if you go watch one of those, like, reverse POV movies, I bet it's mega satisfying. I bet it looks like he's just clean every time he's entering. But he had lost that. When players like that drop off, to me, it's always something like they're not in the right role, the calling style doesn't fit them, something psychological, because you don't lose skill. You don't just wake up one day as talented as this guy was. It wasn't like he was just getting the frags on off. He was outright winning duels, guys. He was out shooting people. When you have that level of skill, it's a bit like when Spinks was a bit weird when he was in the initial Vitality. I knew this can be worked out. The question just is, do you get the time? Is the role available for you? Do people believe in you? If they don't, yeah, you'll get shipped out, which, by the way, could have happened to a Spinks if he hadn't gotten cooking. But just like Spinks and Axile coming back now, if they have that talent level, at least you know it's in there. That's a way better problem to have, in my opinion, than the player where it's like, can they go to another? That's a different equation completely. So luckily, thus far, it has worked so far. And I will say, this is also the last reason why I think this could be a great matchup, actually, even though a lot of people are probably sleeping on it, is because Vitality's looked out of sorts and across the board, and I think they even can't. That's also why I agree with you. I think they're trying to use the humour as this sort of soothing balm to knowing that they're not in great shape. They know they're not the team that won all those finals right now. They haven't been that. Obviously, Katowice, they were semi-irrelevant. So I think actually Vitality is sort of there for the taking. But the difference is, I can see a million different ways this Vitality player turns up, or he doesn't. This other guy turns up, maybe this other one is having an okay game. The difference is, for Cloud9, you need almost every factor to go right. That's the difference. I think Cloud9 sort of has to play peak CS. Otherwise, I don't think they can afford in a win and win this one, Maniac.
Yeah.
And I don't think they can win the major. I don't know about you. Do you think they can win the major?
No. Cloud9? No, I don't think so. It's one of the few teams that I would really, really struggle to see lifting the whole trophy. I think the path for that would then be way too complicated, from quarter semi to then whoever they would play in the grand final.
I'm also so scared as well. If they somehow fluked this major, right, Cloud9 style, immediately, like 2 days later, you'd have that, like, the Score Esports video, like, the AWP isn't even good at it. You know what I mean? Like,
No.
Get out of here.
I know.
Get out of here. You know what I mean? That'd be like the newbie take, wouldn't it?
That was one of my take at the very beginning of the major. I said, if you are a fan of Cloud9, you want them to fail so that they can change.
Yes.
You know, like, if you really are a fan. But then again, if everything clicks now, then what am I left with? I just to quickly add as well on the Axile topic, you made a point about, like, the the promise of a player.
Yeah.
And it's one of the elements that I sometimes, I catch myself not giving it enough attention and importance. Axel is an incredibly young player.
Sure.
The issue that he's got is that when the super team got together, we all wanted result today.
Yes.
Like we wanted result immediately.
Yes.
And this was on the premise of how the Gambit duo was functioning, how strong the Na'Vi core was. We thought we have all the reasons in the world to think this is going to click immediately, and it didn't. And then I personally became extremely frustrated with it. And I thought, you know what? Fuck this. Like, change. Yes. Like, what are we doing? But the truth is, he is only 21. Like, you have to imagine that even if you like hit hardships at some moment, that whatever he's displayed in the past, the future, it cannot be downward. Like, it cannot go downwards for his whole future. That's not possible when you're 21, unless there are reasons that we're not really aware of. So I guess maybe I'm being too impatient with him. I was still at odds with what he was giving and delivering on the server for quite a long time. And I don't know if one strong major would be enough to just change my whole perspective on it. But I will say that he is indeed the future. If you want to bank on a player and if you want to help a player go through any type of hard moment and help them figure that out, then yeah, of course, he's got many, many years of great Counter-Strike ahead of him. Whereas some other guys might be a bit more on the way out. Like Hobbit is obviously on the other side of that spectrum, where Hobbit is extremely reliable, super versatile. There is a lot of moment where if you'd ask me, and probably still today, I would probably keep Hobbit over Axile in terms of versatility right now. But that would that be short-sighted for me? Like, would I?
He's not the same long-term upside, right? He can't be. Yeah, like, exactly, he's not going to be a top 20 player in 4 years, is he? Yeah.
Exactly. So am I being short-sighted here? And then wouldn't it be better to just make sure Axile can pass through that period that he's having with a few months that he's had? Maybe that is a more of a long-term period. That is something that evaded me a little bit. I think I was just being impatient and I just wanted result from this Cloud9 roster much, much sooner than they arrived.
Here's the thing, though. I don't blame you, because the key thing to say is this. People, this is actually, in my opinion, the struggle in Counter-Strike. I'd even say actually the economic conditions potentially even make it play more towards that side, which is, I actually do think in Counter-Strike, I mean, my magic number's about 3 months. I think if you haven't produced results within that, it's rare that your team's going to somehow magically in the fourth month just figure out, you know, Eureka, then just figure the game out and everyone's going to play better. Usually, you've tried everything at that point. You've had your scrims, you've had a few tournaments, you've had the one where you got lucky, you've had the one where you got unlucky, you had the one where it was sort of in the middle, you've had a bunch of online qualified. By that time, you usually know if the team's good or not. But that's the difference, though, between is my job as the GM qualified to this major? Well, in that case, we better be good now. But like you say, the trickier part is if I have a player I actually think could be like one of the great players of the era, like we say, someone in 4 years might be a top 20 player still, or again, depending on which we like, it's hard to let that player go, because you always feel like an idiot if he goes to the other team and in 6 months he is the best, second best Russian rifle, and then you'd feel like a moron, wouldn't you? So I know what you mean. And then the problem becomes, even though in the short term, maybe Hobbit fit my squad now, all of a sudden I'm looking at Hobbit like, fuck, it's like those back in the day when I used to do the stickers trading. You've traded the wrong one. That was the fucking, turn out that was the important one. Shit, I didn't know that was more of a common one. You know, you've bought it at that one. Yeah, it's true. The difference between the long-term goal and the short-term is really tricky. I agree. And then what I'd do is this. The fun thing about the teams in the bottom side is, what's fun about this is, it's like you've put all the dark horses on one bracket side. Because every one of these teams in their own way, Maniac, perhaps with the exception of G2, I think could go to the final. Now, look, I'm going to go ahead and immediately hit it until I can't, but I think you think they can. So I'll leave that open for the conversation right now. The reason I actually think even the G2 one I can't shit on, look, I think they look terrible at this event. I was loving my pick to be the only person who didn't pick up for the playoffs. They even looked, remember, Inferno was their fucking map pick, guys. Like, they looked like they were just going to go out of this tournament. And I'll admit to you right now, Maniac, I had a tweet in my drafts where I was going to ask G2 to fire Huxi because he fucking, he's not only overrated, but he talked shit on my boy Kassad, so I was coming with all the fucking hounds of hell to come after this motherfucker. But luckily for him, God himself reached down and pushed Jim out from behind the boxes, and they won the round. So you know what? Who am I to argue with God, Maniac? If God is on Hooksy's side, then who am I to be against him? So one thing I'll say, I'll give one lifeline to G2. It goes like this. They do have Monacy, mate. They do have Monacy. And I'll tell you what, Monacy right now, it's the best AWPer in this tournament. So there's a world where Monacy can win you a lot of maps that you shouldn't be winning, where it should be going against. So I'll always say that player alone gives you the point. by the way, Nico hasn't been the greatest, but there's a world Nico wakes up for a series. You can never count against superstar players. It's one thing to have good players. These are these are insanely good players. Like, these are players, remember, and if you have two of them, Maniac, here's why superstar theory will always, whether it's actually true, whether it's efficacious, it will always dominate the imagination, and here's why. Because we all know the best thing about a superstar is they can at least win you one map. Well, here's the thing, Maniac. When you got two, you only need to win two maps out of three. There's a world where, this is why I actually think, for real, the angle that's unfair to G2 goes like this. Because they don't have JKS, who was there in all the wins, the pressure is way bigger on Nico and Monacy now. Because now if you have those players, here's the thing, people don't really mind when Hunter has these bad maps, mate, because he's Hunter. And he never had the name of an equal. He was never up in lights, you know. He was always like just entering the star category. So he's allowed to not be that good. Nixon, we all think he's a cool guy. Seems like he does contribute to the team. He was never expected to frag. The real problem is you have massive weight on your shoulders if you're honestly an equal. Like, you basically have to win these matches. You're supposed to in a fucked up way, even though I don't know if it's fair. You play a lot of good teams.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair. I just unfortunately think that what we had seen at the RMR from Nico, which is, again, a touch of brilliance and like the good old flavor of the Nico, turns out that apparently it was more a flash in the pan. And actually, we have reverted back to the average now at this event. Like, he's been,
by the way, he was kind of whacking that VP event series, mate. But there's another thing. I'll tell you what, that crash not only saved Huxley, that might have saved Nico. Because, bro, if he goes out of another major in the group stage, people would have rushed and looked at that match, and he wasn't doing well in that match. He was having some bad fucking maps, mate. So I think he would be getting flamed right now.
By his standards, he's not having a great major, right? Sure. I mean, if we're gonna let me put it this way, right? Let me put it this way, just to play with numbers just a little bit. We said Zaiwu was far from his best, yes. And we talked about how he was sick and he delivered poor Counter Strike. Well, he had a 1.12 rating. Nico had a 105. That is the world we live in now. Like, yes. we have created this entire narrative about Zaiwu being sick and being poor and disappearing. At the end of the day, he still had a higher rating. So I know we have to be a little bit careful with that. Sure. Like, just comparing ratings short term is very short-sighted. But that's just a reminder of the fall from grace from the Nico that we knew and the Nico that is now. I mean, he was also very vocal about it. Like, when he tweeted, CS2 sucks and so does my aim or something like that, he sure. tweeted about it. So I think he's aware himself sure. of the issue that he's having. So that's my one problem. You say G2 have two superstars, and on paper, there's very little for me to argue against that. But one of them is arguably on the leave of absence since CS2 came around.
Yeah.
So he can always come back. And then the other angle, and something that is a little bit under-talked as well, do you realize this is Monacy's first playoff at a major?
People don't realize
that's kind
that,
of
mate.
Sick to think about.
Yeah. This is why, by the way, the other reason I was going to say to fire Huxley is because, bro, this would have been three majors with no playoffs. One, he didn't even qualify to. The other two, they just didn't make the playoffs. Like, if you have the team he has, mate, can I at least have a playoff appearance? You know what I mean? I'm not, maybe not even with the event, but yeah, that's the worst thing for Monacy. He's had all that experience. By the way, he's even won tier one lands, but he's never even played one playoff game, which is another factor, right? If I'm going to take him as the big puncher's chance, let's hope he doesn't fucking turn up on map one with a little bit of butterflies, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we're gonna say G2's angle is the superstar power, and we're already prefacing it by saying, Nico is actually kind of far from that scenario, but you know, maybe we're getting lucky, we're getting the good Nico, and then that can get the ball rolling. Then what does that mean by consequence? It means that honestly, better freaking show up. Like, you immediately have to show up. Put it this way, I don't think, unless something out of this world happens, I don't think there's a world in which G2 win against Mouse without Monacy. And I mean without an exceptional Monacy, like without the high-level Monacy. Like a pedestrian Monacy that has a below or an above-average rating, G2 doesn't win. There's no universe in which they win. And that is a pretty heavy load to have on your shoulder, being Monacy. Of course, you've already won and you've already been on some stages, but it's your first playoff at a major. That's the one little line that on your resume right now is still blank, and you are supposedly, like, power ranking, one of the best players in the world in CS2 right now. Yep. A lot of people tell you you're the best snipers in the world right now, but you've never been in a playoff of a major. And now, apparently, if you don't show up, your team is going to lose. So that in itself is kind of a cool storyline to see how he handles that position, like, under heavy pressure if his team is going to perform.
Bro, I don't know what's going on. I actually do in a way, which is, if you notice, even when I actually broke down Spirit, I did have so many logical, like analytical based reasons as to why they should win that at the end. It wasn't just like, I hope they don't chalk. It's like, actually, essentially, they'd almost need to chalk to give the other team a chance at this point. And even then, they might still win. But I'll say this, mate. Normally, people will know I am a fucking dedicated Mouse hater, because Mouse normally, if this was a previous tournament maniac, like a past major when they didn't have Shuhei, this is exactly where Mouse would do this. They'd go look awesome in the Swiss.
Yeah.
They'd get to the playoffs. You might even have a team they're supposed to beat. Like, hey, they're supposed to beat G2 now. And then you just know me. I would have bet my house on anyone else on the other side of the server. I would go, you know what? Torshi's not going to turn up. Dex is not going to call a good game. They're going to lose map one and they're going to somehow lose this series. The problem is this maniac. Again, I feel like, I don't know, maybe that Geostorm did change who I am. Because, bro, I'm actually going to say, I think Mouse are really going to win this series, mate. I don't even say like they're the fit. I think they're going to actually blow them out. Like, I think Mouse right now, the team, again, if I watch it in the server, there are so many good things. First of all, I pointed this out in a past episode, everyone frags. Now look, let's just get our dick back in our pants. Jim Fat is not going to have a 1.5 rating. That is called overperformance. But I can tell you what, he can have a 1.1 rating and he's not even their star player. So when you look at the talents that Shuhei has, he has like a toolkit of talents in all the roles. Even if you want to say, but Tosh, he'll choke. They can win off an exertion T side. They can win off fucking fragging Vibrolan. Like, they have so many tools. And then actually, I do. This is a Nigel. I kind of buy the story now. Now I get, same way I've given Crixen his credit, but more so, I actually thought maybe it is a flash in the pan, that Gamer Legion team, because the Immer guy's stats were a little bit too good. Even people like Akoi weren't even that good, were having, like, you know, maps where they were just going crazy. You just, even the Isaac guy was winning those bonkers rounds against Hiroki. You thought, can this really compete? I see what the hype about the Shuhei guy was now, mate. I think it's true. He is the truth. Mm. He is legit as fuck.
Yes.
And I have to say right now, I think most angles that I can come up with just go to Mouse in this one. Like, there's only that modesty angle, essentially, I can pick for G2. Aside from that, I think Mouse actually, like, what? How do they lose this series? Essentially, because here's the last thing to remember as well, guys. Collectively, Mouse, the team, a bunch of them have been in a major playoffs before. Obviously, they beat Cloud9 at IM Rio. And then the aforementioned Shuhei was in the final of that major. Like, their actual experience gap's not even that bad, bro. Like you say, the joke is it's Modesty that's inexperienced here. In our brains, we think the other way. It's like, hey, they better be able to... I don't even know if Modesty's turning up. Fuck knows if Nico is. So I actually think, quite frankly, you have to... I'll do the same thing with Cloud9. Bro, I'm going to need to see everything from G2 to win this. I think low-key, Mouse actually has somehow peaked for the major. Like, there's a real world where, put it this way, spoiler, I actually went with my angle. I'm taking Na'Vi to go in the final, so we'll get to that later. But I don't hate all the people I've seen taking Mouse, mate. I can see why they're picking them. If I had to sort of, like, not think of intangible, I think I would pick Mouse. Right now, they're looking very good.
They have an incredible resume, I would say, moving into this playoffs of the majors. Like, you also look at the teams that have eliminated Mouse in, like, high-profile games over the last few months, and this is a very short list. Like, there's a very short list of teams that are capable of beating this Mouse. And of course, I think there is some sort of psychological barrier with FaZe, who seemingly Mouse is not capable of beating, and there's a loss to Vitality, but that's it. Like, that is literally the list of teams that have beaten Mouse. They've even beaten Spirit in a, obviously, a different context. Now, if we play the game of what has to happen in order for Mouse to fuck it up, then I think Brolan and Torji are the two most adequate candidates for falling off and disappearing in a high-pressure match. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I fully trust in Shuhei and in his calling. I was already on board on the Shuhei train a while ago, and everything that's been happening ever since have just convinced me that he is indeed one of the next greatest one in terms of IGL. I have no doubt. Jimpat doesn't need 1.5. I just think he's got ice in his veins anyway. Like, he's already an extremely reliable anchor who's going to go beyond what his task list is supposed to be. And then I think Xersion is, like, improving with time, and it is understandable because he's such a playmaker that experience will inevitably help him figure out when and what works in what context. And he's gonna have mistakes in games that he struggles with, because he's the one that puts himself in the most dangerous positions every time. Like, you watch Mouse, he's the one that takes, like, the crossing of the smoke or the 60-40 gamble. Like, he takes all of them. So the more time passes, and if he's a clever guy, which I think he is, eventually he's gonna figure out and he's gonna filter out, like, the moves that he does and all the tricks that he uses. So Xersion, I'm already ready to believe in. It's not really Torji that at times I've had issues with in like high profile game. And I do think Broland sometimes can sink in his own well of despair. I've seen him sort of like disappear mentally, but these were maybe more of the older days in different lineups. So maybe I'm a little bit biased, and in this different environment, it's not the same, but I have strong images in my mind of him sort of wallowing in like a sad moment in game. So if it isn't for Torje and Broland, to me, like Miles have the upper hand on G2 by a very large margin. Like yes. This to me is like a 65-35 or a 70-30 type situation on paper when I'm looking at this matchup.
And here's actually why, if Mouse made the final, well, obviously, that would be a very interesting angle if they played Spirit. They just beat them at the RMR. That's one of the few teams that fucking beat these guys. Admittedly close, but yeah, they still beat them. So I think that would even be cool. And also, by the way, if you have Spirit against Mouse in the final, CS2 is a different generation of fucking Counter-Strike at this point, guys. Look at those players. Like, where are all the old stars? Like, The joke is, in those teams, you're talking about, like, Shiro being a veteran. He only came along after the online era. Like, that would be a very interesting way to sort of announce CS2 to the world, mate. Yeah, absolutely. Whereas if instead it ends up being, like, G2 against FaZe, like, we've all seen those players play a billion matches, haven't we? You know what I mean? By the way, here's the obvious angle. I kept it till the end, Maniac, because I thought there might be some spice here. Hit me with it. Hit me with the reasons why. Because you're taking Eternal Fire to beat Na'Vi, right? You're taking them to win?
I'm going to disappoint you, but no, I have Na'Vi.
Oh, right. Oh, I actually had Na'Vi. So I thought you were going to hype up the Eternal Fire side for me. You're not going to ride with them? You're not going to believe in the dream?
I will set you up so that you can come in with like a wash of reality check. I'll set you up for that.
Come on.
I understand how watching Eternal Fire right now, if you have an ounce of romance in your heart, you feel like, holy hell, everything is clicking. This is finally this team coming together. After so many years of struggle on Turkish Counter-Strike, they finally believe in Major. And now they found this Wicadia, Diamond in the Rough, and Zentarius is, holy shit, delivering 1.3 plus rating all the time. And hey, Woxy can have a good game here and there. And Kha'Zix is super reliable. Like, I think there's a way that you can look at this lineup and think like sky is the limit in like a storm, like a micro storm that's happening now and everything clicks. And if you think like that, I'm not going to fault it. I'm not going to fault you for that. But my issue is if you are talking about a team that has a propensity to check out mentally from games, you are also looking at the freshest, most rookie team there is at majors. It is a reality. The least amount of playoff appearances, even for major, is only one major debutant.
Yep.
That is where the romantic in me sort of has to give up. And like the professor comes in the suit and be like, okay, what the shit is going on here? No, listen, that is unfortunately my angle.
Okay. Again, I don't know. Maniac's just not riding with any of it. Normally, you love the romantic story and the young player who's going to go to the next level. And I'm the one who has to come in with the bitter, throw the bucket of water in your face. Of course, they aren't, you bloody idiot. They've never been a major player before. What are you talking about? Okay, we've just shifted the dynamic here. It's all good. That's the way I even hyped you up. I was even ready to go with you. You know, I was ready to join the romance and see if I get swept away in it all. But okay, if we're just doing cold, hard reality, here's the problem that you have. It's quite an obvious one. So, first of all, you have to look at this, right? Which is, this is why I'm actually going to do a video on this. Don't worry. I'm going to do a video explaining why I'm sort of like a major hater. And even then, hater's more his personality. I actually think as an IGL, he's actually entering the Hooksy equation for me. I've described on past episodes where like, if you win the games, I have to say you're doing something right. I just don't know that you're a tactical genius, which is what we often infer if you're a great in-game leader, right? But what I will say is this. The reason why I'm not a fan of that narrative is because, bro, he had 10 years to show you with Zantaras and Kha'Zix that he was the genius IGL and it was all his strats. Instead, he's walked into a super team of Turkish players. Like, guys, not only now we know the Wicadia guy is another, like, revelation rookie, the other three players are the three players everyone had for all of history on their Turkish super team. It was, I want to see Zantarez play with Woxic and Kha'Zix. Now, true, you're right. Nobody had Kha'Zix in like the supportive aspects of the game. Yeah, we all had him as a star as well, like Zantarez. In fact, the dream there was you had the two aggressive riflers and you had the AWPer, right? True, that's not what they've got. But with Wicadia being sick, you actually unironically have four Turkish star players. Not a star player in the sense of other teams in this tournament, but traditional roles. And actually, I am even somewhat impressed that they've managed to find a role for Kha'Zix, who kind of was considered the failed Zantarez. He didn't quite make it. He had his chance in Contact and those teams to be the Envy or whatever they were in. Like, he was in these squads and he was given the roles. It's just he was good, but he wasn't Zantarez. And by the way, even Zantarez wasn't Zantarez. Sometimes he is at this tournament. I'll give him that. My problem is this. First of all, everyone is fragging too well in this team. Like, spoiler, Major has a 1.2 rating in this tournament. Like, that history, not Thorin, history tells you that cannot hold. Now, I will give him credit. He did in 1.6, Maniac knows this, when he was in the French scene. He wasn't an in-game leader, guys. He was a fragger himself. He actually had pretty crispy AK. He was an interesting player. But that's not the role he's doing now. He is the IGL now, absolutely. You can tell by the roles in the team. So that, I think, made people essentially... that part of the romance, I have to immediately, you know, like, throw the bucket of water on the two dogs fucking. It's like, calm down on that one. With that said, though, there's obviously some great knockout power here. Like, I'll tell you what, I might give them the edge firepower-wise against Na'Vi, mate. Like, Na'Vi, actually, once you get past Wonderful, you don't know if GL's going to turn up. You have no idea how Wimmer's going to play. Is Bit here for the game? Is he just average? You never know in Na'Vi. So there's certainly, like, a bit of a punchless chance. Maybe they can win a map. They can make it interesting. My problem is, again, I feel like you have to have the super team comp. But you have to have a lot of people frag out. You have to have a lot of people play really lights out CS. And the problem is, as you said, of all the teams I can be cynical about Major experience, this is easily it. Because the only one is Woxic, that one time at the bullshit face at Major London with that Hellraiser squad we all remember back in the day. And it's not like they were relevant. So the problem is, Woxic himself's been gone for ages, guys. This is the team that's brought him back to life. It's even why, if people don't remember, there was always that thing in Turkey of like, why don't Woxic and Zantaras play together? They never decided to make it happen. So as much as the romance is cool if you're Turkish, if you're anyone else, this just feels like, unfortunately, I think Na'Vi just beat you by being boring. I think Blade just comes with a great game plan. I think Na'Vi, by the way, has the most predictable veto in the universe. But then again, there's one map that the Eternal Fire is really good on, and I think you won't be seeing that against Na'Vi. So there's a problem you have immediately. You needed that specific map. So I think if you come into this one, I'm riding with my boy Alexi B for this one, mate. I'm saying he wins this. I think he takes it.
I agree. And one way I like to look at things when I'm considering a matchup and I'm trying to figure out a favorite is I'm thinking, what are the safety net in place if some individuals, key individuals, are having a hard time? Like, what is the team relying upon so that they can make up for who's having a hard day? And like, how strong are the fundamentals in the team? And how strong is the calling? When you're watching Eternal Fire play, I get the strong sense that Major is... he's doing way too much in order to keep everyone in line, like in the right mindset with the calls and with the communications and all. I've seen him like talk a whole lot just to make sure that everything is right with a very high intensity. If you're going to tell me that's going to happen on stage, that for me, that's absolutely unsustainable. Like, it's unsustainable for a leader to have to overcompensate for the lack of comms from his players. And that's a little bit of the Apex conundrum as well. Like, a Vitality that's struggling, it's Apex that's talking way too much and losing track of things. I'm worried about Eternal Fire in that sense. If they're having a hard time and they start shutting down and now suddenly it's Major who has to micromanage three parts of the map at once, I think he's going to completely lose himself. And this is where you get the drop in performance that you're talking about. Like, there's no way he performs like that if he has to pull out fires left, right, and center. So I really think that the floor of Na'Vi is much higher just because they have, like, their game plan, I feel like, is much more established. And they also probably rely on individuals being capable of making decisions in chaos a bit better at Eternal Fire. I mean, we can criticize Bit's performance, but the truth is he's got experience in that context, in the Major major winner as well. So I really feel like if shit hits the fan in Na'Vi, there are more safety nets that are here to save them and to make sure that they maintain some of the protocols that they have. Whereas for Eternal Fire, it's a bit all or nothing. Like, it's all or nothing. Either, like, everything clicks and they will eat you alive, or the wheels come off and then it's going to be very wonky, and then I think Major is going to drown trying to save his squad. So that is why when I'm considering these two teams, I side slightly with Na'Vi, because I think on a playoff game on stage, some bad shit is bound to happen. Like, you are going to lose city rounds. You are going to lose city clutches. You are going to get eco'd, or you're going to lose to Deagles. Like, this is bound to happen. And the question is, how good is a team at bouncing back from that, and what do they have to help them bounce from that kind of situation? And I give Na'Vi the favor in that sort of equation.
And I do think, again, in light of the fact that I stressed for Eternal Fire so little experience, people are forgetting because of what a weird bunch of names. Every Na'Vi player has been in the playoffs. In fact, everyone except Wonderful has been in the semis or better. Like, they actually have, individually, a lot of experience in playoff scenarios. So in that situation, yes, I'm not as worried about some of those names. And then also, on the Na'Vi style, I do notice the tough thing about this is, like, for example, if I have Na'Vi going to the final, like, I think it's possible. I don't think they're going to win there. I don't think they can beat the other teams. And the reason why is, the issue on Na'Vi, this is why that whole discussion keeps raising up of like, if Simple is going to Rifle, then should he replace Immer? Like, the reason why that conversation is going to continue to be stirred up is beyond Wonderful, and even Wonderful isn't Simple and Zeewoo, guys. It's just a very good ARPA. Beyond Wonderful, you do sometimes lack a little bit of firepower. And as a result, even when Na'Vi wins, they do make a bit of a dog's dinner of it, Maniac. They win a lot of 13-11 games and overtime games and 13-10 games. And yeah, true, they also lose a lot of those games too, but like, it feels like it can be quite hard to get everything out of the team. It's actually why another thing I do credit in this team is I credit a Blade and Alexi B. Like, it looks like one thing I love about Blade is this, Maniac. I've said it in the past, it can be a weakness short term that he always has the professor mindset of like, look, let's go over it again. If I explain it to you like this way and this concept, and let me drill this concept here, that in a long run, if your players had unlimited learning potential, would make you the greatest team of all time eventually, which you could argue. He kind of did that. Do that with Na'Vi 2021. Remember when they first made that bit move? Actually, they were still a bit dodgy. They still used to use the Gambit. People used to be flaming them. That was when famously Richard sort of was like, is this guy even doing a good job as a coach? He got all the backlash. But you give Blade, as he asked for, like his 6 months, and fucking hell, we all know how insane that team was. The joke is only Putin could stop them is the fucking unfortunate scenario, right? Because no one will ever know what would happen to that team. We all, even Pumic, I'm sure, still wonders what would have happened with that lineup. The difference now is that's not the lineup you have. But again, I think about what a mess they were when they first had to bring out Wonderful in. And mate, tournament to tournament, I see what they're working on. I see them get a better map pool. I see them win against an opponent that beat them before. And the other thing that is cool with them as well is they were the team that gave Spirit a decent game at Katowice. They've also shown they can match up with the big squad. So I know it's hard because you think of Na'Vi, first of all, you think of Simple, you think of Electronic, you think of having the most crazy firepower. That's not really this Na'Vi, but they're still a fucking good team, mate. They're still a pretty good squad.
I mean, they took a map of Spirit again here.
Yeah, exactly.
Two different events where they take a map of Spirit. So I think you have to give it to them. And also, again, I know Alexi B is a very polarizing figure, but if you pay attention to Na'Vi's game on the T side specifically, you can see his problem-solving ability. Like, you can just see it. It's not a skill that every leader has to that extent. Like, the ability to, after 20 or 21, 22 rounds of game, to have the right call, like have the right idea, to figure out, okay, this is what we need to do. I've seen it happen time and time again with Na'Vi at this event. And it's such a strong skill to have, to know that, of course, Blade gets credit from that too, because in foreshadowing of the event, in advance of the event, they're working on all of these strategies, they're working on all of these solutions. So it's not like Alexi B is materializing new ideas immediately and spontaneously. They've worked on it together. But to have this ability to sort of tailor what you need to do and have the right call at the right time at the end is something that I give Alexi B a lot of credit for. And if we're playing the matchup of Major Alexi B and you ask him, okay, Maniac, the scoreline now is going to be 11-11. You have to tell me who you believe more, then I would tend towards Alexi B. I feel like he's building a body of work where he gets to have like the right call at the right time, and he wins these overtimes, he wins the 11-13 game. So that's a very, very, very strong asset to have. The problem is the individual output of Bit and Immer, as simple as it is. Yes. And I cannot pretend that I have figured that one out. I really don't know. I thought that time would be the most meaningful factor for Bit, and the transition from, you know, speaking his mother tongue to English would impair him for a while, and then eventually it'd get better, and then he would frag out like crazy. It's not really the case. So I think my theory kind of bowls off a little bit. Whereas for Immer, I mean, listen, unfortunately, unless there are things in that team that we do not know about, that we're not aware of, there is no way you can maintain that kind of performance with the roles that he has. There is no way. Like, he has roles and resources to frag out. Like, he has quote-unquote superstar positions. So there's no way out of it. Like, I don't even know what kind of conversation needs to be having between the group stage and the playoffs. I would hate to be in that position, but if that doesn't pan out, then Na'Vi is going to have to ask some serious questions about the future and then consider the replacing of this guy, because he's getting way too much space and attention for the outcome that's coming with it.
Yes.
And that's why I don't really hate people when they say, oh, you know, how could Na'Vi play with a different player in that role? Yeah, I think it's a valid question. Like, with all of the other elements that we're building up and hyping up about that team, if you plug and play,
it's the obvious person to replace.
You plug in like a new player, oh my God, like you could have an absolute death machine right there. So
yes.
Yeah, he's in a very uncomfortable position. I'll make it real. I think he's on the chopping block.
Yes. Oh, I'm with you completely. Like, first of all, on the Alexei B one, this is actually why, if people don't know, I was one of the first people to like stay on that train when everyone hopped off when he joined the OG team, was because I've famously always said I got to hear the calls when he was actually in Flashpoint. And I can tell you straight up, one of the most impressive things was, like you say, any time it was in the old MR15, a 13-14 game, he was making the call. And the call he would make would play out and he would win the round. And I was like, mate, that is actually, because that's Carrigan-esque, that is one of the most rare but most fucking worth its weight in gold qualities. Because as you say, there's plenty of times your players get you into a situation where it's like two rounds to play. Can you get one T round? The question then becomes, not just do you have the playbook, but do you have the genius call? Everyone knows the famous thing in MR15 was, when it's round 28 or 29, you all look to Carrigan. What is he going to come up with now? He's going to figure out the call that will be remembered when you win the tournament as the pivotal round. Alexei has that quality, in my opinion. And right now in a team, by the way, like I say, that gets in a lot of close games, you fucking need that. Because I'm with you. If you actually look at the team, this is why it's both fair and unfair what we're all doing to people like Bit and Immer. Because the issue is this. First of all, if they were ever the players they were before, we don't even need this conversation. We're all loving it. This is another like weird mixed international, like semi-super team type. Ooh, interesting. God, like, it would be like Mouse. You'd have a great caller, a bunch of weapons. Cross, it'd be sick. Like you say, you'd be mixing it up every time you'd be in the semi-final. But even if you're not going to say that, if you just look at these three pieces, wonderful, JL, and Lexi B, those three pieces I have no problem with whatsoever. Those three pieces all do their job. In fact, JL, I think, even sometimes overfrags. Yeah. Like, I don't even think he should be sometimes dropping a 25 bomb or whatever he does. I might not like him as a person, by the way, but I'll never diss people's actual in-game ability if they're good. The problem, if you're people like Immer especially, Bit can ride because he has all that success in the past. If you're Immer, here's the issue. It's not that you can't be in this team, but if this team would go to the next level without you, then you shouldn't be. You know what I mean? You should be on OG or Game of Legion again, or go and play in fucking Bleed with fucking Cassada or something. You know, these are the teams that you can go and rediscover your game, and maybe you are brilliant. Because the obvious thing to me I'm questioning is this. I think both Shuhi and Alexei B are great IGLs, but you don't always have the same feel for an IGL. You don't have the same sync up. Maybe with Shuhi he had that, because I did think when he played in Game League, he looked very poised actually. He looked very different to this player who looks lost or questioning himself. He looked like, actually, that's why I thought this guy was going to be a stud. I thought maybe he is the truth. Like, look at the way the guy's playing. Like, it's like a fucking mini Nico or something. His T-side's awesome. I haven't seen that guy in Na'Vi, mate. Even the flashes of the fragging, it's always got a fragility to it that scares me. So I have to say on that one, it's like what I say about Huxley. If you're Huxley, it's great to be in G2. The question is it great to be in G2 with Huxley if you're Monacy and Nico? Perspective is what we have to ask it, and you have to ask who the orc is. Just like with G2, you're supposed to win the major. If you're Na'Vi, look, I won't say without simple you're supposed to win the major, but if you look at the team now, like Maniac says, you're only a piece away, maybe. By the way, if you make two changes, we can start talking tomorrow. If you could bring in certain players, this could be a very dynamic squad. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, what about this then? So maybe we'll do one last topic. I'll tell you what, pick one team that didn't make the playoffs that we'll talk about. Who would you pick?
Ooh, who's interesting? A team to that you? Didn't make the playoffs that would be interesting to talk about.
Who would you be interested in? To some storyline, some angle you've got for them? Who are you gonna go with?
Okay, let me have a little looky then. A team that Well, I was going to say VP, but no, because of what happened now, like, I don't want to do that. We've already covered the whole thing. I
would open the wound VP again.
We would have a completely different conversation.
Yes.
Oh, but there is an interesting one that we can have. You, prior to the major, we did an episode together, and you were relatively hyped on Heroic.
Yeah.
1-3.
Oh, yes,
one
that's
to three,
a banner. Yes.
Not making it. Yes. What is your take, impressions of Heroic? They haven't really lived up to the hype that you were ready to give them.
I mean, first of all, the thing I have to say is this. Look at what the actual result, because remember, they did awesome in the first Swiss. That was great. By the way, remember, because this major thankfully had a lot of the big names waiting in this like elimination stage, to be fair, the first round of Swiss is actually how it should be. It's not like those bullshit other majors where you have like FaZe and Vitality in the first Swiss. This was the Swiss where if you are Cloud9 and Heroic, you're supposed to farm. You're supposed to farm all these fucking noobs and show you're actually really good. So they did their job completely in the first phase. The issue is, in the second one, what is most damning, Maniac, is just who you played. Bro, you won the BO1 over FaZe and Auto. If you win that one, I'm supposed to be really confident in my pick that you're going through the playoffs. If I then say you're going to play Complexity to be a one, that's mad winnable. What are you talking about? Then you're going to play VP, another winnable game, mate. They can be up and down. And then if I tell you at the end to just get to the 2-2 game, just beat Pain Gaming in a best of three, bro, I have no excuse whatsoever for this. This is actually just unacceptable. But hey, like, their level went so much further down. Like I said, so if anything, they beat the hardest opponent of the ones they played. Somehow they blew it against the lesser teams. And they actually looked mad unconvincing as well. Like, they were having whole maps where you're like, bro, they're not even in this map. Like, what the fuck's going on here? So, give me some of your initial impressions, because let's get into this. I do think this is a team worth talking about. That was a team for me that could have been a dark horse to be in these playoffs and be again. If they'd have been against the Heroic, maybe now I'd be hyping them up that they could beat them or something, you know. I said Heroic again. If they'd have played a G2, Na'Vi, maybe I'd said they could win.
Yeah, well, prior to the major, I think I was ready to give them a fighting chance for like spot number 8 at the playoff. You know, the one that now Eternal Fire is having, I was thinking, okay, if this spot is up for debate, and then we're going to give a chance to some of the lesser established teams, and I think Heroic would have been a pretty passable name for that. I think what really happened to them and what really exposed them is the loss against Complexity probably hit them morally more than it should have. And it usually comes with the territory of being a new team that is riding a high from event to event, where eventually you're going to be... And I want to put this delicately. You are not playing a perfect Counter-Strike, and you were not in Katowice, and you were not in the opening stage, even though you were winning, because you obviously didn't have the time to set up your perfect Counter-Strike. You're a brand new roster coming on from all kinds of angles. You're going to need a long time to figure out the Counter-Strike you want to play. But you were riding a high. You were having great results. You were surprising everybody. Your superstar Nurse was firing. Tezzes was blowing people away from the server, multi-kills on multi-kills. And then suddenly you lost this game against Complexity. You were almost going to be 2-0. You were going to be one best of three away from the playoffs, but then you lost that game. And then you got slapped in the face by VP, and then you kind of lost track of that momentum, and you reverted back to being a little bit more isolated, a bit more individualistic, and then you have some individuals who completely disappeared. Now, I'll put the disclaimer on. As the Heroic versus Pain game was going on, I was covering a different game same time on the broadcast. So I have rewatched the catastrophe of the 12-0 half on Mirage.
That was insane. Yeah.
Holy hell, was that bad? But it's like, I don't think I have a proper opinion on that one. But I will say that it is extremely damning. Like, there's nothing I can say to save them from that run. There's no excuse to be made. I think it's a harsh reality check. I personally did not have them in the playoff, but I also didn't expect them to lose 2-0 to Pain and look like they are two classes below. That one is disappointing.
No, there's two components to this. One, as you said, it's exactly what I would have said if I'd have gone on the desk after they'd been eliminated. Here's the first thing I would have said after they lost to Pain. I would have said, Heroic are all going to be waking up in the middle of the night thinking about that OT loss to Complexity until the fucking Shanghai major, boys. Like, because that moment was the moment where you were almost 2-0, and then you were like, and then from then you never even got to a second win. That was it. After that, it was all downhill. Right. First of all, that is the problem with being a newer squad and a squad that didn't have an existing core, is you've got nothing to fall back on when you get mentally broken like that. It's like the VP example. I've always said the underdog, when they don't win the OT game that could have won them the series, it's famous they get blown out in the third map. And if you're the other team, that's what you're even waiting for. You're like, phew, we got past that. Now we can work. They never looked the same after that. And the seeds were already there though, Maniac, because even in that game, if I ask you, just look at the scoreboard, what name's missing? Where's Nerds? And he had a terrible... I've looked this up now. There are only 8 players with a lower rating in this Swiss stage, guys. This was a guy, remember, when his best, we were talking about, like, he was like a sleeper, like top 10 player in the world. He was looking fucking sick, mate. He was like the engine of this team. So, I mean, as crazy as it is, Nykodos was the one I was criticizing before. He actually ended up playing the best out of everyone. Like, this was a real... Yeah. This is just a collapse, unfortunately. This is also where... That's why earlier on, if you wonder why we kept framing it and kept going back to, like, but even if I think Spirit are great, and even if Mouse are great, it's so hard to pick the inexperienced players and the teams that haven't been there. This is why, guys, because Heroic is the best example ever. In the less pressure matches and against worse opponents, everything was normal. They were just dusting them off. Not usual day in the office, no problem. But when they got to the important part where people were like, okay, right, I believe you. You're a top 10 team. Show me. They had a collapse. By the way, this can happen to a lot of teams at majors. I mean, we've seen great teams collapse like this. So it's not like it's totally implausible. I just think it's sad is the thing, because for me, like I said, I was never really the true believer in Ents. Even teams like VP, it depends who you're playing. You're conditional for me if you're going to make it. This team, I actually did think, showed me before this tournament, a level of play and consistency where I actually thought they can do it. Like, but the problem is, my first thing I would tell you is I need Nurts to be my star player. He can't be the ninth worst rated player in the tournament. We've gone off of then. What am I doing then?
Yeah, there's no coming back from that. Listen, yes. There's nothing to save him. All I can say is that he's given me no reason to think that this was not just a one-off. Looking at his trajectory as a player, I have to imagine that this is just an outlier of a terrible performance. But what is interesting is going to be to follow Heroic from now on and see how they keep on working and or improving or not.
Sure.
Because I think, again, riding a high at the very beginning of a team is relatively easy and comfortable. Now you've just had a slap in your face and you are going to be a little bit in the shadow for a while. You have to rework your play style and all of that. And so if they ever can make it again to a position where I'm ready to talk to them or about them as a top 10 team in the world, that would be impressive. I would be impressed. For now, all I had seen looked like mostly sort of a contextual storm with like a lot of momentum and a lot of having fun and also a lot of repressed anger from previous lineups. So everyone is kind of happy to play together and having a good time, right? Now it's like the passion of meeting someone new after you've been with someone for many, many years. And then you think everything is great in this new one relationship because, oh my God, I finally don't have to deal with all of it. And then the months pass and then reality starts settling in and then you face your own problem again. And you're like thinking, oh shit, actually, yeah, this is something that I had with me. So I do wonder if there's not going to be a little bit of that with Heroic, when once the passion dies down a little, then will they actually want to be partners in life for a longer time? That we're going to have to see, because this is the first real little obstacle that they've made on their path.
Yeah, I will just obviously say on that one, let me think how to phrase this. I would say that this is actually where, even though I'm aware I'm doing it, I'll still inject myself with the copium. Like, here's why it's okay though, Maniac. Because if they had have fluked it to the top eight, then a la Cloud9, they might go, the roster's totally fine. Stick with this for the next year. So, whereas now, I've opened the door, they might still make one roster move, which is all they need to get a bit better. Listen, it's bullshit. That still doesn't in any way excuse what they did here. I know that, but I'm just going to tell myself that because I'm like you. I do also think, I don't think this is like the decisive one. They were frauds all along. If anything, I actually just think it got to them. I think absolutely not winning that BO1 cracked their mental, and then a bunch of underdogs took advantage of that. And by the way, well played to those underdogs. Well played to Pain Gaming.
Yes.
Fucking season advantage of it. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, by the way, so to end, we're just going to say Thorin's picking Team Spirit and Maniac conditionally is picking Vitality with the major.
I'm okay with that.